Welcome to the Pilot's Advisor with Ryan Fleming, a first officer with FedEx on the 777 at the helm. On this show, we'll delve deep into tailored financial strategies, insights, and wisdom crafted exclusively for those who rule the skies. We'll help you navigate your financial flight plan with the same mastery you exhibit in the cockpit. Prepare for takeoff into a journey of financial clarity and empowerment. The Pilot's Advisor starts now. Welcome to today's episode. Join us for a special conversation as we dive into leadership, perseverance, and football's impact with retired head coach Larry Fedora. Fedora's career highlights include pioneering offensive strategies, leading teams to victories in bowl games and championships, and mentoring players who achieved greatness. He'll share insights from starting as a position coach to becoming a head coach, covering key victories, recruiting, and his influence on players' careers. Fedora has earned numerous accolades, coached at top universities, and developed top talent throughout the years. Beyond the field, he values resilience, hard work, and positivity. He'll share stories with us about his coaching days at the Air Force, to his interactions with Michael Jordan while the head coach at the University of North Carolina, and ultimately giving us his insight into some of the philosophies that have shaped his career and his outlook on life. This episode offers an inside look at a coaching legend's journey with personal stories from Fedora and Ryan Fleming, who played under Fedora at Air Force. They will talk about their enduring friendship. So prepare to be inspired, entertained, and view football and life from a new perspective with Ryan Fleming of the Pilot's Advisor and Coach Fedora. Let's get to it.
Welcome to another edition of the Pilot's Advisor. Walter, thank you for that awesome intro. Obviously, we have a very special guest here with the premier college football player for many, many years. Coach, thanks for being on the show today.
You bet, man. Glad to be here and excited to spend some time with you.
Well, I was thinking about this, and as scary as it sounds, I have to admit that it's been over 25 years since you were ripping my butt out there on the football field, and thought it'd be nice to let our listeners at least know how this all started.
Yeah, it's been, but I'm sure I've ripped your butt since then, so, you know, can't be too bad.
Oh, absolutely. It's been continuous. Somebody's got to keep me in line, which is why I think you've had such a huge effect on my life. But so everybody knows, I guess it was circa 1998. I was a young cadet and football player at the Air Force Academy, and you were a young, hot, and I don't mean hot by looks. I just mean fired up coach at the Air Force. He was my position coach as a wide receiver at the Air Force Academy. I was trying to fight to even get on the field at that point. But Coach, you had a major effect on me because you were definitely hard on me, but I think it taught me how much hard work it was going to take to get on the field and try to be a player at that level.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Ryan. I you know, those are the things that make a retired football coach make their chest swell out a little bit, is to know that they had a positive impact on some of their former players. And I do. That was, that year was pretty special. 98 was a pretty special year, you know, when the WAC conference championship that year. And so it was a pretty special year. There was a lot of good things going on. And, y'all were a great group of guys that we could, I could push really hard, and that was my specialty. I could push people really hard.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about this a lot on the show because you never got to see me develop into a player, and life is all about adversity and bad things are going to happen to you. And it's kind of funny because when those events happen, you kind of find out who you are. And that season, and you may or may not remember this, but I was fighting to try to get on the field and try to get that third spot. And I was on the kickoff return team.
Third spot. That's what's incredible right there. Third spot.
Well, we had Dylan Newman. We had Matt Farmer already out there. Yeah. And I was battling out with Mike Barron to try to get on the field a little bit.
Yeah. I remember.
This is how it goes down, and we're going to talk about a little bit of the adversity I faced that year. So I was on kickoff return, and of course we're running through, and evidently you didn't like my effort on that last play, which was pretty normal. So you had told me to go – well, I don't even know if we're allowed to say this nowadays in college football. Basically, you better go hit that guy and then blindside him and get him on the ground. Well, I went full speed, and I did all those things. The problem was – that in a freak accident, that guy's shin or knee went right through my shin and shattered my tibia. You remember that day?
I do remember that day. Yeah, I remember it. And I think I jumped on you about laying on the field for too long and told you to get your butt up and get off the field.
That's exactly what happened. Before the ambulance took me away, he was yelling at me and saying, get off my field. So anyway, we ended up winning a championship that year. Coach, you had a lot of other opportunities. You were, a young, fiery coach, and you ended up leaving that December for other opportunities, which, of course I was heartbroken, but I was back trying to fight my way back just from an injury and see if I could come back and play ever again. So I definitely remember that, but here we all are all these years later, still in touch. And, you've had an amazing coaching career, which we're going to talk a lot about that, but I wanted to at least let everybody know how we met, how we know each other. And, at that point in time, you were a position coach where your full-time job was to make my life miserable, right?
Part of it.
Yeah. So how does that change as you go up through the college ranks and become a coordinator? And then, then you're the head coach and, you've coached at every level doing that. Cause then you're worried about all the other coaches and almost everything that's going on in an organization.
Yeah. So as a position, coach, you've got, however many guys, say 10 or 12 guys in that room that you are responsible for. And you're responsible for every aspect of their life, whether it's on the field or off, you're trying to teach those guys what it takes to be successful and pushing them beyond what they think they can go, so they can go even farther, and you hope, in the long run that those lessons that they learn are going to carry them through life, right? And so then maybe you move from there. I moved up to be a coordinator. Well, now you're just running the entire offense. You're managing four or five coaches, position coaches that are managing their group now. And then from there you go to be a head coach and now you're just managing 10 coaches that all are still position coaches. And on top of it, you're managing an offense, a defense, and the special teams as far as units. And so, it just the responsibility grows. But hopefully your philosophy and the thing that you built, the philosophies that you've built along the way are what carry you through all of that.
Well, absolutely. And I don't think many people, I've been lucky enough to be around college football quite a bit, even through my 30s and 40s. And being a head football coach is like being a CEO. It is a ton of responsibility. It's a full-time job. I remember I actually went and spent a couple of days with you when you were at Florida. And as much as I love college football, it quickly taught me that, hey, maybe this isn't for me. And I remember a great quote that you said from that. Do you remember what it was?
I'm not sure if I remember directly. It may have been something along the lines that if you can live without the game of football, you probably ought to go do something else.
That's exactly what it was. And I am going to keep putting you on the spot, just so you know.
All right. Well, you're testing my memory.
When you're getting old now, too.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So reflecting back on your coaching career, to be a little bit more serious, and I know you've coached so many players, you've been at different universities, different teams, but what do you see as one of your most rewarding experiences through that time?
Yeah, that's a great question and a tough question because, 37 years of coaching football, it's, you have great experiences every single day. If I didn't, I wouldn't have done it. But some of my favorites, I mean, hey, winning that, the Mountain West Conference Championship in 98, taking a team as a head coach and winning a conference championship in Conference USA at Southern Miss in 2011, winning a division championship in the ACC in 2015 at North Carolina. I mean, those are highlights, but I mean, there are so many. I mean, I'm going to give you one that'll blow your mind. There was a young man that came into my office when we were at Southern Miss, probably about 2009. He was a basketball player there at the school. I had never met him, didn't know who he was. His name was DeMar Dotson. Walked in my office, basically sat on the couch and told me he had his eligibility was up in basketball. He had one semester left, and he wanted to play college football. Would I allow him to walk onto the football team? And so I asked him a lot of questions about who he was and all these things, and boiled down, okay, what position did you play in high school? Well, I didn't play in high school. I just played basketball. Okay. All right. Well, what position did you play in junior high? Didn't play in junior high. Okay. Pop Warner, what position have you ever played in the game of football? And he said, Coach, I've never played football in my life. And I said, we got a pretty good program. It's a Division I program, and you're wanting to come out here and play football for the first time. I said, DeMar, I don't know if that's a great idea or not, And I said, what's your dad think? He says, well, He said, "My dad thinks I'm a, you know, he's well, he I won't use the words that he were that he used, but he just said, my dad thinks I know to go to Europe and play some basketball and make some money, you know." And make a long story short, DeMar, I talked to the basketball coach, said he's a great kid, he's going to be a great teammate, all those things. And so we allowed him to come out and play football with us. He played maybe about 7-8 plays a game on the defensive line. And a scout came through at the end of the year and asked who was that big, tall, good-looking guy. And I told him the story. And I said, you know, I told the scout, I said, he needs to be playing offensive tackle. That's what he is. He's a long, he can move his feet, all those things. So they took him. He went to Tampa Bay. He made the 53-man roster. And he played about 11 or 12 years in the NFL and had a lot of success. But the special part about it is still to this day, he'll text me on Father's Day. He'll text me on, you know, Christmas or a holiday and just tell me how much he appreciates what I did for him. And so that means a lot to me.
Well, absolutely. I'm sure it's about the relationships. And I've heard a lot of great stories over the years. And I think as time goes on, you know, the wins and losses. And of course, I love watching college football on Saturdays and seeing it all. But it's the stories behind the game. I think that does a lot for me. And, you know, multi-sport athletes, that's definitely, I definitely believe in that. And that's a great case of that. But more than anything, this game is about life lessons. This game is about, you know, learning how to lead and being a leader, being a part of something bigger than yourself. How, you know, you're going to get knocked down. So how are you going to get back up? Cause that's life. And so when I look back on it, that's why I love sports. That's why I love football. And I think one of the things that you were so good at was getting the most out of every little player that you coached, but everybody has different personalities. And I thought you were amazing at seeing how to handle certain people differently. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think, you know, to be a good football coach or to be a good coach, you have to identify all the personalities that you're responsible for. And you have to find out what makes each one of those guys tick. What's going to motivate, you know, this guy compared to this guy. Some guys you got a pat on the back, some guys you got a kick in the ass, or in the rear end, excuse me. You know, so
good coach.
It just depends. And so you got to learn, you know, your team. You got to learn how these guys are motivated, and then you have to motivate them. You got to do it all within, you know, within the same talk or the same room or the same, you know. And so sometimes you got to take a guy aside, you got to pat him on the back, and you got to show him some love. And then the other guys, you got to just push as hard as you can possibly push them, you know. And so it's just, I think that's one of the things that maybe you can't treat everybody the same. I mean, you just can't. You're going to be fair, but you can't treat everybody the same because they don't all respond to the same way.
Do you feel like you had more effect on players as a position coach than you did as a head coach? Because just like you said, as a head coach, you're almost talking to the whole team at the same time. You might have some small interaction in the locker room or passing by in the hallway, but I would imagine as a position coach was where you really, really got to know each one of those guys in your room.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's where you really build a true relationship. I mean, you know, because as a position coach, you're having the guys come over to your house, eat dinner with you and your family. You're getting to know them on a personal basis. Because like I said, you're responsible for everything they do, both on the field and off the field. And so you have to have that relationship. And it's just, you know, with 120 guys on a football team, I mean, it's hard to do that as the head coach. I mean, you can't build that type of relationship. I was fortunate because I never missed a quarterback meeting. I was in the quarterback meeting every single day. And so I got to build that relationship with those four or five guys in that room. But that, you know, that's just a small part of the entire team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think you were one of the most brilliant offensive minds for a while in the game. And I, you know, which is, of course, why you had so many opportunities. I had to chuckle a little bit, though, coach, because, you know, when you were my position coach, with your, you know, vast military background, you knew a lot about what was going on up on the hill at the Air Force Academy. Was that a little bit different than other places you coached?
It was by far the most different, you know, but at the same time, one of the most special places that I've ever coached. You know, I didn't understand, you know, for me, it was about football and building you guys into the best players you could possibly be. And then also at the same time, knowing that that was going to help build you into the best men that you could possibly be. I didn't really understand. The military part was kind of taking away from that, you know, because you guys were doing all the other things that you had to do for the military. So I really didn't really understand that, even though Coach DeBerry did a great job of trying to make me understand that. I was a little stubborn and hard-headed, and that's not why I was, you know, why I was doing what I was doing. And so, but it was an unbelievable experience, I mean, with quality people.
Well, you were the perfect break for me getting away from the Hill and dealing with the military stuff, and it was quite entertaining at times. One of the things I like to talk to coaches about the most, and you know, before I get into some personal stuff with what you're doing now, is just hearing recruiting stories. I've been around the table listening to some coaches tell some recruiting stories, you know, and I know you can't tell us everything, but there's got to be one or two stories that, you know, you walked into a house or you were in a certain town that that people would like to hear about what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, there, I mean, you know, first of all, recruiting is not a cookie cutter thing. I mean, every single athlete that you recruit is totally different. I mean, totally different. And so, I mean, you know, you go in, first of all, you got to do a lot of listening as the recruiter. You got to find out what that young man is looking for, what his family's looking for. And then you got to provide that for him. You know, and they have to understand that the university that you're at is going to give them that best opportunity, the things that they're looking for. But, you know, probably one of my favorites was a young man who, I was at Baylor University and he was in Lawton, Oklahoma, and he was committed to, Nebraska at that time. And he was, he didn't like to fly. You know, it made him sick when he flew. And, you know, we were about 4 hours away. And so even though he's committed to Nebraska at that time, and then we're talking about in the 90s now, early 90s, mid 90s, when Nebraska was in their heyday. I mean, they were winning national championships, you know, every other year, was to get him to come down to Baylor University and take a look at the university. And he did that, and you know, he walked around, no big deal, and got on campus. And walking around on campus, and he found out there was a we had a live bear on campus. It was the Baylor Bears, right? They had an actual live bear on campus in a den, and he was blown away by the fact that there was a live bear that he was actually going to look at. And he made his commitment. He committed to the Baylor Bears because he had a. I had a real bear, and went on to be a first-round draft pick to the Miami Dolphins. So it was a really good get for us that we had a bear.
Everybody needs something just a little bit different, huh?
That's exactly right. You never know. You never know what somebody's looking for.
Absolutely not. So, Coach, you know, I know we can talk about football all day long, and I'm going to have some more conversations with you about that for sure. I think you recently said, which I thought was hilarious, you found out in retirement that there's actually people that don't like college football. So what has retirement been like for you? What are you doing now? How does your day look? I know you just came back from the ranch. Let everybody know where you're living. I think they'd all want to hear that.
Yeah, well, it was hard for me when I got out. I mean, you go 37 years in coaching football, and people really truly don't understand. I mean, that you got about 2 weeks off a year. You know, you worked probably, I think we were averaging about 47 of the weekends a year, you know. And so it was 7 days a week. And, you know, it was months on time. And you didn't get to spend a whole lot of time with your family, which was unfortunate. But it was the way it was. It's what it took. And, you know, so when I got out, I was blown away that there were people out there that really didn't care who won on Saturday. You know, I mean, they didn't even know games were going on. It was unbelievable what was going on out there in the world. I had no idea because I was so consumed and so narrow-minded on the game of football and my, you know, in the career that I'd chosen. And so now I've retired. My wife and I are empty nesters. We live in Waco, Texas, and we spend our time traveling, going to see friends. We just got back from the state of Mississippi, visiting friends that we had been with while we were out there coaching. And, you know, that's one great thing about the game of coaching. We were married 34 years. We've moved 17 times all around the country, and we've got great friends all over the country. And so we get a chance to go visit them. I like to hunt, fish, and playing golf, working out, staying busy. I mean, all the time. So it's like we really never have any downtime, but it's been a blast.
Well, I've been lucky enough to get to meet your family, your girls, your son, Christy. I mean, is it 34 or 35 years now?
Yeah, we're on 34, going on 35, yeah.
Well, obviously she's a saint, you know, not only to put up with you, but to put up with those moves. But what I thought was funny, and I don't think most people realize as well, most of our listeners are probably pilots. Many of them probably served in the military. And being a college coach is very similar to being in the military and having to move every 2 years, or you're getting a call and then you might be gone in a week. And you know, the spouse, whoever, you know, is kind of picking up the pieces for a lot of it, because you're off and running and doing your thing. And I think it's very interesting to see that, of course, it gives you all these amazing experiences, but it's hard on the family.
Oh, it's very difficult on your family. And I have an unbelievable wife who basically raised our four children and did a tremendous job, you know. And out of those 17 moves, I can't tell you if there may be maybe one or two that I was around to actually help with the move. I mean, because, you know, jobs come open at the end of the season in December, basically. And at that time, you head out and you leave and you go to the next school. And your wife and children stay back, and your wife has to, you know, finish out school or whatever you're going to do, and get a house ready to sell, buy a new house at the new place all at the same time, orchestrate the move. And it's really hard. And it's hard on your kids because you're pulling them out of schools all the time, you know, and I'm not whining about it. It is what it is, you know, and always worried about the effect it was going to have on our children. But I can tell you, our four kids, if you ask them, they love the lifestyle. Maybe not at the time, but as they look back on it, they got to do some incredible things that other kids don't have the opportunity to do. And so it's been a pretty special thing.
Well, absolutely. And I think much like the kids, we call them military brats, but much like brats, they become very resilient. You know, sometimes in the day-to-day moves, it's not easy. Making new friends at the new school, it's not easy. But it makes you probably a much more resilient person over time. And at some point in time, you could probably look back and go, hey, you know, maybe that was for the better.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And one thing I will say about our four kids, we have a son and three daughters. And you know, is that when they did move somewhere, they knew they had three friends immediately, because their brothers and sisters were moving with them. And so it made them be tighter as a family unit. I mean, they're very close and always have been. And so that's been pretty special.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, I have to have a little bit of fun with you since I have you here on the podcast. I'm going to go to an article that I'm probably going to link here. And I know, you know, in June and July, it gets a little rough and there's not a lot of stuff to talk about. But this article that I had back in the day, and I don't know why this still pops up, but it talks about Larry Fedora having a visible six-pack abs with the picture of you, and I'm not a good picture. I know it's one of your daughters. Is that, which one of your daughters is that? I know you know the picture I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know the picture. I mean, that's my daughter Sydney, and we were at the beach in Destin in the 2 weeks that we got off, and she learned a great lesson from posting something on social media, you know, and then ESPN ran with it that fall. So it was, it was interesting.
Well, I remember because at that time you were coaching in the ACC, and I felt like all they were talking about is your abs, and it was all over. And it wasn't just like a couple of days. It was, what was the conversation behind the scenes with Sydney? Hey, look at the effect that this had.
Well, we talked, we had a nice little talk about it, you know, and I mean, she was in high school at that time. She thought it was funny, you know, they all had a blast with it. I was trying to, you know, hey, here's a life lesson right here, you know, that you got to be careful about what you post. And so I'm sure they learned something at my expense, you know, so it was, it was good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a conversation I have with my kids all the time, because once it's out there, it's not going away either. This isn't,
it's just like you said, you can pull it up right now if you want.
Oh, it's still right out there. I'm not sure if social media was like it is today that I would have graduated high school, college. I don't know. It would have been an interesting ride, that's for sure.
That is no doubt about that.
Tell me about how you and Christy met.
Yeah, so we were at a small school in North Texas, Austin College, the Austin College Kangaroos. I went there to play football, and Christy had gone to OU. She's from Dallas, and she transferred to Austin College. We were actually in a psychology class. That's where we actually met. Now, I had a class, I can't remember what the class was, but it was like an 8 a.m. class that I sat behind her. Didn't realize who she was, didn't know her. I just remember I got there late. There was one spot open. I sat down, and I sat behind this girl that had this big hair and, you know, bows in her hair. I mean, I couldn't even see the front of the room, basically.
80s hair, right? So,
yeah. And so, but psychology class is where we actually met because, unfortunately, I didn't have any books. And we got to be for the first exam, and I kept noticing that this girl over here with the glasses was taking a lot of notes. And so for the first exam, I just said, hey, would you like to study, you know, for the test together? Because I didn't have any notes. I didn't have a book. So that's how we met. We studied together for our first exam in that psychology class.
That sounds about right. You needed a little help.
Yeah, and I made a better grade than she did on the test.
And then she hasn't lived that down to this day. I'm sure that comes up.
No doubt.
Well, I remember that I was getting married, and I asked Coach Fisher DeBerry was at my wedding, and he stops my then fiance going down the aisle and says, "Karen, are you sure you're going to do this?" And you know, I'd sit here and worked on, you know, getting her to say yes and all this, and Coach is trying to shut it down right at that the very day.
Well, he was giving her an out. That's what he was doing.
So, I do apologize for my voice, by the way. I was with a bunch of the guys hanging out watching the Super Bowl, and I woke up this, yesterday morning, and I barely had a voice. So it's like, well, that's great. Since I'm doing a podcast with Coach, I'll just have to make him talk a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I know I called you not too long ago because you always taught me that the two things that I can control in life, and it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's practice, a game, business, flying airplanes, the only two things that I can actually control are my attitude and my effort. And right. It's funny because you beat that into me. And of course, and I've, you know, told my kids that over and over again when they have a tough practice or life doesn't go their way. And I saw that my daughter had taken a marker and she had written it on her leg prior to this big soccer meet that we had. And so I had to take a coach and, or I had to take a picture and share it with you. And it was funny because the first thing you said was, I hope that's not a tattoo.
I was worried that it was a tattoo. I was glad to see, you know, that she's learned that, that attitude and effort is all it takes. But I was glad to know that it wasn't a tattoo also.
Well, I guess I was too. You know, society's changed a little bit. There's a lot more tattoos out there, but I don't want that to happen until she's at least out on her own and can make her own decisions. So,
yeah. Well, it is. I mean, you know, you think about it though, Ryan. I mean, and I know you've lived by that, but I mean, attitude and effort, that's built. I mean, basically, that's all it takes. If you got the right attitude and you put the right amount of effort into it, you're going to get it done. Whatever it is you're doing in life, you're going to get it done. I mean, that's not just sports. That's every day of life. I mean, that's all it takes.
Well, the thing I've been amazed about as I've been around, you know, if you're around sports long enough, there's coaches out there that are, you know, motivate you. And it seems to me like almost all coaches that are successful are very good at motivating their players. And at the same time, handling adversity because things aren't going to go your way. You know, how are you going to transition or Fido or whatever it is? And I think that, you know, that's a huge thing that translates to life as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, about handling adversity? And, you know, because I think that ties right in with attitude and effort.
Well, I think, yeah, you know, so for me, Ryan, I mean, my whole life, just in the way I approached everything, it was, you know, adversity's coming. I mean, you're either, everybody that's listening to this podcast is either, they got something going on, some problem going on in their life right now, or they just got out of a problem. Or guess what? Here comes a problem. Something's coming. So, you know, it's all about, it's how you, you know, do you worry about problems? Do you worry about adversity? Do you dread it? Or do you get excited about, you know what? Something's coming, you know, and how am I going to attack this? How am I going to overcome this? I mean, that's what life's about. I mean, knowing that problems are coming, it's how you attack them every day. Do you look it in the eye? Do you grab it by the throat? Do you choke the crap out of it and know that you're going to beat it every single time? Or do you lay down and do you give in? Do you say life's too hard? You know, I can't do this. I don't know what to do. You know, you're not going to make it if that's the attitude that you take in life. And so, hey, adversity's coming. You better just get excited about it and you better attack it each and every day.
Well, absolutely. And I know you got to know my dad. All the guys call him Sexy Rexy, but you got to know Rex. And one of the things he always said to me, because life was going to happen and something would happen, and he goes, well, how are you going to react? How you react to this right now is going to determine who you are and what everybody thinks of it.
There's no doubt. I mean, it's okay. Let's take it to football. There's going to be 4, 5, 6, 7 bad things that happen in a game every single game. I don't care if you're playing in the Super Bowl or you're on a 7th grade B team playing. Something bad's going to happen in a game. And the majority of the time, the team that reacts to it the best is the team that's going to be successful. You know, everybody talks about momentum. I mean, that's how momentum is created, by good and bad things happening in a game. So something bad happens. It's how you address it. It's how you, what's your attitude going to be about it? How are you going to attack it? How are you going to overcome it? You know, and when you do that and you do it enough, you gain confidence knowing that you're going to have success no matter what is thrown at you.
Well, I think that's a great message, and just being prepared for that and having the right attitude, just being positive on most things help. I'm not always good at that. I'm a little bit more of a realist, analyzing the whole thing versus having that positive attitude and knowing right away that you're going to take advantage and get through it.
Listen, some people think positive is a pie in the sky. You're supposed to look through these rose-colored glasses all the time. That's not what being positive is. Positive is just knowing deep down inside you're going to have what it takes to get the job done, right? Yeah, doesn't mean you're not questioning yourself. Doesn't mean that you're not questioning, you know, hey, is this the right decision or is it not? It just means that, you know what? I just know that if I have the right attitude and I put enough effort into it, I'm going to make it the right thing and I'm going to overcome this. It's just that, it's that confidence of knowing no matter what, no matter what it takes, I'll overcome it.
Coach, how old are you now? Am I allowed to ask that?
Yeah, I'm 61 years old.
You recently had you were in the gym working out. I think it was when you were 60 and you wanted to prove to yourself that you were still a rock star.
Okay. Yeah.
Now I'm not going to share anything. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Or do you want me to tell that story? I'll tell the story. So yeah, I was 60 years old. I was actually in the gym and it was one of these days where there's no one else in there. And so, you know, I was like, okay, I was feeling kind of good. And I hadn't deadlifted in a long time. And I thought, you know what? I wonder if I can still put some heavy weight on there and deadlift. And so I put some weight on, it felt kind of good. So I knew the last time I had done like 400 pounds was when I was 50. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to put 400 pounds on there and I'm going to pull it off the ground, you know. And so I set my camera up so I would have proof that I was able to do it. And so I did it. It was extremely hard. And the next thing I knew is I woke up. I was laying on my back on the concrete. And I was kind of looking around and I didn't know what happened. It's the first time I'd ever passed out in my life. And so I really didn't know what happened until I got my camera and watched the actual footage of me pulling it off the ground and passing out from a lack of oxygen.
Well, I'm sorry. I think that you know, there's not many people that are going to the gym consistently at 60 years old, let alone deadlifting 400 pounds. And I was lucky enough to see that video. And it just reminded me of the way you are. I mean, it's full throttle. And it's mind over matter. And here you are going in there and saying, well, I might pass out, but I'm going to do it first.
Well, so, I will tell you that my family was very upset, especially all the daughters. My son thought it was funny. But I had to promise my wife that I would not attempt to do that again. And so I made that promise to her. So I'm not going to do 400 pounds.
Yeah, you're getting a little older, Coach. You might need a spotter or at least somebody there to help you walk around a little bit. You know that
it would have been smart to at least have another person in there to have helped me. You know, but yeah. So I didn't say I was smart. I never did say that.
Attention aviators, when you've spent years in the cockpit managing the complexities of flight, isn't it time you navigated your retirement with the same precision? Introducing RetirePilots.com. Right at your touchdown zone on our homepage, there's a beacon flashing Get My Free Toolkit. Click and you'll be cleared for a direct route to the Pilot's Advisor Retirement Toolkit, which is tailor-made for pilots like you. Inside, you'll find two important books, The Pilot's Advisor and Pilots Retire Early. Decipher the 9 critical decisions when retiring before 65, and discover the 7 lessons to help pilots land safely in retirement. But that's not all. This free toolkit is packed with altitude high value, including extras to get your retirement plans off the runway. When you order this free toolkit, you'll receive crucial tax planning information. You'll also discover ways to light the afterburners on your 401k. And you'll even earn a free portfolio analysis. So, captains and first officers, don't let turbulence disrupt your golden years. Start your descent to a clear, comfortable retirement. Vector on over to retirepilots.com to grab your free Pilot's Advisor Retirement Toolkit. And let's embark on this journey together. RetirePilots.com.
Well, I want to transition a little bit and have some fun with this. You wouldn't know this, but the guy, the man that helps me produce my podcasts is Walter Storholt. And he happened to be at the University of North Carolina back when you were there as the Tar Heels head coach. So I want to bring him out here to say hi to you and ask a few questions and tell him how he knows you. Well, Walter, are you there?
Yeah, Coach, it's pretty cool to hear you guys go back and forth for this last half hour, because I remember the first time I met you, and I know that you're not going to remember this because it was in a sea of a room of 1,000 people when you were introduced as North Carolina's head coach.
December 7th, 2012.
Remember the day. Very nice. Very nice. Speaking of adversity, by the way, we were having all sorts of tech problems setting up our live radio broadcast that day. So I remember, you know, working through adversity to get everything pulled together just in time and problem solving on the fly. But it's really funny because I very much remember when we talked after you were introduced to the big crowd. I remember saying on the air right after you left, I think I'm ready to go run through a brick wall. And I have a feeling a lot of people that meet you probably walk away with that impression. And it's so funny because I'm feeling the same way today, just hearing some of your kind of philosophies and how ramped up you get and the story of being in the gym at 60 lifting and going for that 400 pounds. So it's a neat trip down memory lane for me, and also kind of just feeling that way again.
Well, it's good to see you again, Walter. I can't say that I actually remember meeting you new on that day, because it was a lot of people, and it was a pretty mind-blowing day for me. It was kind of a dream, and it was exciting, and there were a lot of people that are shaking your hand and smiling, and you see a lot of faces, and it's just kind of a blur. But it was a great day.
One of my questions for you does kind of counter a little bit of what you just said. You were never accused of being smart based on your weightlifting story. But I remember the big mantra at your time at Carolina was smart, fast, and physical. And hearing that within the conversation about with Ryan about controlling your attitude and controlling your effort being the two things that you put in front of you and make your main focus, it's got me wondering, since we've talked so much about motivation, where do you draw those kinds of things from? Are they from your own life experiences, your mentors? And then how do you distill down, all right, I think this is what I want to build my season around or build my tenure around? Where do coaches draw that kind of motivation from? And come together with these different things that then guide their teams?
Yeah, so, they come from all over the place. First of all, when you realize, I was lucky because I was a freshman in high school when I knew I wanted to be a Division I head football coach. And so at that point, I started building my philosophy. I started gathering information. I had some great coaches around me at from early ages in life that always had an impact on my life. And I knew I wanted to have that same impact on some young man's life in the future. And so I started, putting things away. I mean, things that motivated me or things that I thought were pretty cool out there that people were doing. It was nothing that I came up with by myself. I mean, I didn't invent anything. I did a great job of just stealing things that I thought would be good and that would fit our teams and that I wanted our teams to emulate, And so that's kind of how you put your philosophy together. And if your philosophy's sound, you believe in it and you stick to it, usually you're going to be successful. It's especially when adversity hits that Ron and I just talked about it. You can't panic. You have a philosophy, you stick with it, you're going to be okay, and you just push through. And I think you get those ideas from everybody that you come in contact with, or stories that you hear, or maybe some of your own experiences in life.
It's neat how you have to assemble what works for the group that you guys were mentioning earlier, but then also what works as on an individual basis for motivation. That's kind of neat to hear the challenges that you have to go through navigating that as a coach. Do you have a phrase or a philosophy, even though that you're done with coaching, do you still do them personally? Do you have one for your retirement years or for your family?
Every morning, it's going to be a great day. I cannot fail. I can only learn and grow. I mean, I started saying that in 1996 when I went to the Air Force Academy. You know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I had it taped on a mirror, and I put it on my mirror. And when I would go in there to brush my teeth in the mornings, I would say it. I would say it out loud, and my wife would always get mad because she's still trying to sleep and she hear me saying this. You know, and so then I started doing it. Like in the shower, you know, and then it became just a habit. It was the first words, the first thought of my mind when I wake up in the morning, it's going to be a great day. I cannot fail. I can only learn and grow. And man, that's kind of how I set my my mind every day, you know, and doesn't mean that only good things are going to happen to you that day, you know, but it kind of sets your mind for the track that you're going to be able to overcome anything that happens.
Coach, when you were a head coach, were you still cutting the sleeves off your T-shirts and doing push-ups before meetings?
No, I didn't cut the sleeves off any of my T-shirts, and I wasn't doing push-ups before my meetings. I continued to work out, yes, but no, I wasn't doing that.
When did you stop doing that?
I don't really remember doing that. I mean, to be honest with you, so that must be some memory that you have.
No, I think it happened because I'm pretty sure you also cut the sleeves off your Austin College jersey to show a little bit more of your arms even back then.
Well, I when my wife met me, I didn't have a shirt with sleeves in it. you know, so that was one of the things she taught me was to, you know, you could have shirts with sleeves in them. So, yeah. So but that was way back. That was college.
Well, obviously, you've touched so many players. You know, other coaches, I'm sure, where you've had a drastic effect on their lives. But, you know, getting to do what you do, you've also got to meet some amazing people. And I have to at least ask. I mean, there's a picture of you shaking hands with Michael Jordan right behind you. And obviously getting to coach at North Carolina, getting to meet all those people. That is somebody that I don't even know if I'd be able to say hi to him if I saw him. I mean, what was that like? And what can you tell us about that relationship with Michael?
Yeah, the first time I actually got to meet him was at a Hornets game, and they took me up to his box, you know, and I hadn't even coached a game at that time. And, you know, they introduced me to him, and I couldn't talk, you know. I mean, and I'm going to tell you, I've gone to the White House, I've shaken the president's hand in the Oval Office, and but I couldn't actually speak the first time that I met Michael Jordan. And what a unbelievable human being. And that picture actually is the ceiling is the roof game when he made that comment. And I got to spend time with him before the game, probably 20, 30 minutes, just sitting there talking to him after the game. And it was pretty special. He's a pretty special person. He really is.
I can only imagine. The only a person that I did meet and I couldn't talk was Jerry Rice. I was at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony as Kevin Green's guest, and I saw Jerry. And, of course, I grew up, you know, wanting to be, you know, all we talked about was Montana to Rice, and Jerry Rice was it. You know, that was the guy. And I met a lot of great players that night, but I saw Jerry, and I just was like, you know. It's kind of embarrassing, but he's the man. Yeah.
But you know what? I think they're used to it.
Yeah. Well, him for sure. I had an interesting experience just happen. And of course, Walter will clean up this whole podcast and make it flow because he's used to me jumping around and having no clue what we're talking about. But that night, I was actually hanging out with LaVon Kirkland and Greg Lloyd for most of the night. I was hanging out with them. Well, guess who just came back to Clemson and is on the staff now is LaVon Kirkland.
Really?
Of course, I'm here like, well, we used to hang out, you know? So it's pretty wild. He was a grad and just came back on the staff. And so it's pretty funny how the world just kind of goes around.
It really does. It's a small world. That's why that's why it's a great lesson to always treat people the way they should be treated, you know? To treat people the way you want to be treated because you never know what's going to come around somewhere down the line.
I got to jump in with just one more, and it's more on the lighthearted side for you, Coach. And that would be when you were coaching Ryan, and you're like, all right, this guy's in the Air Force. He's going to fly planes. Were you like, I don't believe this, or did you have full trust that Ryan would be flying planes one day? Because Ryan plays this very very humble approach. He's a very smart person, but he has this very humble persona. So I'm just curious, as a football coach, and with how hard you rode him, if you were like, man, this guy's gonna be flying planes one day,
I don't think he had high expectations of anything happening back then.
I will tell you, Walter. You know, going into that. Into that position room, you have to remember that I'm in there with five or six, cadets who didn't really understand the military part of it. And I knew that every one of them in that room were a whole lot smarter than me. There was no doubt. I mean, they were at the academy. They were, at the United States Air Force Academy. And so I wasn't sure after I got to know each one of them, I was worried about our country, actually. I was worried about if these were the leaders, of the future. And but no, all kidding aside, they were most unbelievable. Ryan himself, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable man. Great pilot, great person, great dad. Great brother. I mean, it's what those guys became. They're great people.
I'm paying them a lot of money to say all those things, by the way. So the cool part about this podcast, I just got back from a Super Bowl trip where we go. It's like been a 15-year tradition where all the guys I flew with in the Air Force go watch the Super Bowl together. And wow. One of the guys is after 35 years serving our country, he's retiring. So Carrie, being smarter than me, made sure I had to go to that. So I did. But then I came back and I was all excited about doing this podcast with Coach. And I normally have a couple football helmets behind me to include, the one I wore back then and played in the blue-gray all-star game. Well, I show up this morning when I get back home and we're just transitioning to move to the lake house and all my helmets are gone. So my backdrop's not what I expected today.
You still got a football back there, Ryan.
Yeah, he's still got it. It looks good. And I will say this about those guys, Walter. Those guys, if you told those guys to run through the wall, they didn't question you. They just did it. They were special. I mean, they were special. And still,
that's nice for a coach, isn't it?
It is great.
I mean, that buy-in.
They weren't always the best athletes that I've coached in my career, but those 2 years, and I was only there for 2 years. Those 2 years were probably two of the most special that I have in my 37 years of coaching.
I wanted to ask you about your relationship with Red Bull. That's one of the ones I wanted to talk about because I know for a while there you had an intimate relationship with Red Bull.
I was a pretty high energy guy and always have been. And when I went to the, I guess it was really when I got to Oklahoma State is really when the thing kind of took off because, they had a guy there in town who kind of sponsored me and started providing it. So I started doing quite a bit of Red Bull. And then I went to Southern Miss and he talked to the distributor there. And so the distributor there kind of took care of me. And then when I went to North Carolina, that distributor, took care of me there and cases and pallets of Red Bull. At the end, when it was out of hand, my routine was always about five cups of coffee in the morning, and then it was 10 o'clock in the morning. That's when I stopped drinking coffee and got on the Red Bull. And I was averaging about 8 to 10 Red Bulls a day before practice. And practice started at around 2:30, so it was, And so then I think it was about 2016. I think it was 16 when I decided I better stop. So I just cold turkey stopped it, and I was worried that it was, that I was addicted, but it was just a habit. It was just having something in my hand it just kind of fit my personality.
Well, and that's just your personality too. You can just turn stuff off and turn it off like that because of your discipline. And I've been around it enough to know that. And one of his other sayings was you're either the hammer or the nail. There's nothing in between. Which one are you?
Yeah.
I know you got some more questions, Walter. Please go.
Yeah, my last one, Coach, is just on, by the way, I've heard you mention hammer and nail, that reference, many times during your podcast, Ryan, so it's fun to know where that came from. But, Coach, my last question for you, do you feel like you got out of college football at the right time? Did retirement come at a good time for you with just how much the landscape has now changed? Is that one piece of adversity you're glad that you don't have to necessarily navigate through those new waters? Or is that like a, if you were entering into the college profession today, would that be an exciting new challenge to try and figure out the whole new recruiting world and everything else that's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question, Walter. I know I made the right decision at the right time. It was the right time for me. And, as I've watched the new landscape, the NIL and the transfer portal and I still talk to coaches all the time, friends all over the country, and how miserable they are trying to navigate this new thing, you know, because there are no rules basically to it. It's just, it's wild right now. And, no one really knows how to do it, how to contain it, how to make it what I think what they originally wanted it to actually be for, you know, I'm glad I'm not dealing with it. You know, it's not really something that I necessarily believe in the way it is right now. I do believe that that the players being compensated in some way, I think they needed that. I really do. But I think it's not what it was intended for right now. I think it's totally out of hand. And so I'm glad that I don't have to deal with it. I really don't. I really feel bad for the coaches that are dealing with it right now. And I feel for young coaches that are getting into it, I don't think they're going to be getting into the profession for the same reason that I got into the profession. And I don't know that I could still do the things that I would want to do in college football coaching today that like I used to do. I don't know that I could drive people the same way I used to drive them. So. You know, so it's really good for me to be out.
Money changes other motivations, right?
That's right. Right. Yeah. Different ways to motivate people now.
See, that's a part that really scares me is because I'm not convinced that the same life lessons are being learned with loyalty, commitment. You know, if you're not good enough, working harder to get on the field at that one place versus just transferring somewhere else. The other thing that scares me is, I mean, what's the percentage of athletes that even go into the NFL? 2%? Less than 2%?
Yeah, it's less than 2%.
And then what, the average life expectancy is 2 years maybe?
It's a little over 3 actually.
Okay, so if we take those percentages and with everybody moving around, a lot of these players aren't getting their college degree. And, you know, 3 to 4 years later, they're out of a job. And if you don't have a college degree, now what's next? Because there's a lot of life living after that. And one of the things that just really scares me is I kind of wish it was like, hey, you stay and get your degree and then we'll write you a fat check. Because then, you know, you can still play football, but at least you're set for life now. And if we truly cared about the kids, I think that it needed to be a formula a little bit more like that. Because right now, I think it's going down a scary path. And as Coach, as you mentioned, the unintended consequences.
Yeah, I would be surprised if this is what they intended it for, I really would. It is scary. Each generation, you know, we want things better for the next generation. And so we work really hard to make things easier for them. I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to do things. I think, we get softer and softer every generation that goes by because, we're dealing with less hardships. You know, I think if you look back, you already acknowledge the broken leg that you had. I mean, you look all those hardships and all the adversity that you overcome to get to where you are in life. It's what makes you who you are. It's what's inside of you. And that's the man that you become because of the hardships you had, not because things were easy for you, you know. And so, you know, I don't know that giving these young men some money is a bad thing. I just think that there has to be some limits on it. It's out of hand right now. I mean, because you think about it, these young men now think about the financial part of it. They're learning how to manage money now where a lot of young people never have that opportunity. So they're getting the opportunity to at least learn that. Whether they do or not, I mean, hey, that's up to them. But they at least have that opportunity. And so there could be some really good things that come out of this. We just don't know.
I'm glad Coach brought that all together, that we finally brought up investing or money on the show. but it goes to say we need to start teaching personal finance in schools as well, because it's probably one of the most important things you deal with in life, and we don't do a good job of teaching anyone how to do those things.
Yeah, I think you'll find that you've got personnel on every staff now that are player development. And probably every Division I coach out there is at least trying to put things in place for young men. You know, I know we had a plan that these guys had to learn as freshmen. They had to learn as sophomores. They had to learn as juniors. They had to learn as seniors. And it was basically, it had nothing to do with education other than, how do you get a credit card, and showing them that process and what is a credit card and what does it mean and how do you handle it? And, just different life lessons that I think that you'll be surprised. A lot of football coaches are actually trying to help in that area also, because they know they need it.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that. Coach, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I very much appreciate you letting us ask all these questions. Have a little bit of fun with you as well.
Yeah. Walter's got his work. He's got his work cut out trying to put a show together off of this. I assure you.
Well, hey,
we've got AI these days. We can make you say anything.
There you go.
Yeah. He normally doesn't use my face on these podcasts either. It's somebody totally different, which is a good thing, since I have that, radio face.
Yeah, no doubt you do.
So, Coach, is there anything that you'd want to leave us with, advice, for people that are listeners? One other thing I did want to say, I look forward to seeing you at the next South Carolina Coaches for Charity event, because we're lucky enough to be around coaches and help Coach Fisher DeBerry with this charity, and you're a board member as well. So I look forward to hopefully seeing you there at the next event. And anything that you want to leave for everybody?
Yeah, I hope I can be. And listen, I know – we mentioned some of the things that are going wrong with college football or sports right now, but let me tell you what, there's still the positives far outweigh the negatives. The experiences that young men, young women that are involved in athletics, the things that they learn, the overcoming adversity, teamwork, discipline, grit, all the things, those are all things that are going to carry them through their life. They're going to be better people for it. They're going to be able to overcome things in their life, because life's not going to be easy. Nobody owes you anything. You're going to have to fight and work hard for anything that you get in this world. And so when you take that attitude about it, I'm so thankful for athletics. I really am. I feel sorry for the young men and women who don't get involved in athletics, because I don't think there's anything else out there that's going to teach them those life lessons. And so, even though there's some negative things going on right now with sports or college football, the positives far outweigh the negatives.
Absolutely agree. Coach, I appreciate you getting on with us. I know we're jumping all over the place, but I enjoy having a conversation with you. And I know everybody will like to hear the things I've heard over and over again over the years, as you've been a great mentor to me and got me hopefully down the right path. I can't wait to see what I'll do when I grow up. But thanks for being that person in my life. And I know you've touched a lot of other of your former players as well. So thank you. And thanks for giving us this time.
Well, I appreciate it, Ryan. That's why I got into the profession in the first place, was to hopefully have a positive impact on young men's lives. And it's always great to hear what type of impact or what kind of impression a former player had. And so I appreciate you saying that. Walter, it was great to see you again. And
yes,
good luck on putting this thing together.
You got it. No doubt about that. We'll take good care of you, and appreciate you taking the time to join us as well.
All right. You guys take care.
We'll do. Hey, please tell Christy and the rest of the family I said hello.
I will do, Ron. Take care, man.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.